Hello, welcome back to Lactation Station. I'm Michaela, and today we're going to talk about a couple of different things. And the first thing I want to talk about is age. Does age really matter when you're lactating? First, let me say that no matter your age, 19 to 60, your milk is still a good product. It doesn't go sour, it isn't bad, or any of that stupid shit. You know, I read an article online about a woman that was at her doctor's office. She was a breastfeeding mom. And she overheard two women talking about how a friend of theirs was too old to be breastfeeding in her 40s and that her milk was sour and it wouldn't be any good for her baby and she would be better off putting the baby on formula. You know, and this is a recent conversation within the last few years. It amazes me that there are still these archaic ideas out there of, you know, situations like this. Let me reassure you that no matter your age, your breast milk is good and there's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing wrong with you lactating at any age. There are women in my Facebook group and in my lactation group that are in their 40s. I personally am 53. I have another friend who's 55. I know a lady that's almost 60 that is starting her lactation journey. So don't let somebody tell you that you're too old to do this. I also read on another forum, a woman in her 60s, I think she was 63, asked the question, you know, is she too old to lactate, that she would like to do that for her husband. And it was a little bit old of a forum. I think it was 2014. And the response was from a doctor that told her she was too old and that it was not something that was possible for her and she could not accomplish it. And it makes me think of my own doctor who couldn't tell me how to fix my, you know, menstrual problems. Why don't doctors know more about the female body and what it can and cannot do? But that's a conversation for another day. Back to age. Age doesn't matter. What only matters is what you want to do. If you are, you know, whatever age, in your 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, I don't care. If this is something that you want to do, then you can absolutely do it, you know, barring health reasons or anything else that, you know, could inhibit it. If you're a normal, healthy adult that you want to lactate, there is no reason why you can't. I did find a quote by a lactation consultant online who explained that the quality of breast milk does not change over time, regardless of your age, your socioeconomic status, the length of time you have been away from breastfeeding, your country of origin, or any other parameters that you could possibly consider. Breast milk remains high quality and chock full of nutrients and antibodies. And that quote was in direct correlation to breastfeeding moms. But that same logic applies to us as well while we're inducing. There's nothing wrong with your milk, so don't think that there is. If you want to start lactating, it doesn't matter what your age is. Just start. Don't let people tell you that you can't. All right, so the next thing that I want to talk about is transgender lactation. And I don't profess to be an expert in any way, shape, or form. I just, you know, have a little bit of information that I know that I want to put out there that may help somebody. And I also want to add that nothing that I say should replace anything that your doctor tells you. Inducing lactation can present more of a challenge for transgender individuals. In, you know, most of these cases, you can generally refer to three components that you're going to need to follow. Hormonal priming of your mammary tissue, prolactin promotion, and hormone withdrawal and then expression. Hormonal priming of the mammary tissue in non-gestating people generally involves a combination of oral contraceptive with estrogen and progesterone. You need to take it continuously for months without a menstruation phase, which means if you've ever seen birth control pills, you know, you have, I don't know, I haven't taken them in so long. You have, I think, 25 days of the regular pill and then 5 days that are sugar pills. So you just skip those sugar pills. Women who have transitioned will likely already have a medication regimen that includes estrogen and progesterone and an androgen blocker. If they have not had a bilateral, I don't know how to say this, orchiectomy. No, I know that's not right. O-R-C-H-I-E-C-T-O-M-Y. Orchiectomy. And there's somebody out there that will tell me how to say that word. Anyway, depending on the length of treatment, women will have growth of mammary tissue because estrogen and progesterone makes that happen, helps increase the growth of the mammary tissue. When women desire to induce lactation, you have to go through several hormonal stages of pregnancy that can be approximated for a similar period of time as in induced lactation with non-gestating people, and that averages about 3 to 6 months. Doses of estrogen and progesterone may be increased gradually and as tolerated to 8 to 12 milligrams of estrogen and up to 400 milligrams of progesterone daily during the stimulation phase. There are some risks, especially of blood clots with higher doses of estrogen, and all of this should be discussed with your doctor. The most useful guide for you and your symptoms to know if you're getting anywhere is to be aware of changes in the breast chest area. At this phase, a lot of people will recommend that you start stimulation of the nipples and areola and then gentle hand expression 1 to 3 times per day. So that's, you know, that's a lot of like the Newman Goldfarb protocols. It's similar, but because transgender women are already on a hormone replacement therapy, then you're just kind of tweaking that a little bit. And, you know, it depending on what their dosage is or what your dosage is, then, you know, your estrogen may have to go up a little bit and your progesterone may have to go up a little bit for approximately 3 to 6 months in order to achieve that pregnancy type of hormonal change within your body. And then you want to stimulate the prolactin. And prolactin's promotion is generally achieved with galactagogues. They may be used during the hormonal stimulation phase because if you're using all natural galactagogues, then it's not gonna, it shouldn't have an effect on the other medications that you're taking. Or you can wait and take the galactagogues during the expression phase. But traditionally, induced lactation protocols use these medications throughout the induced lactation process. So you can, you know, start them as soon as you decide that you want to induce lactation. My only caution here, other than I'm not a doctor, so I don't know how they may interact with your other medications, is I usually caution women to be wary of fenugreek because it isn't always a good idea. And I personally had problems with it. I found out that I was allergic to it. I have a lady in my lactation group on my Facebook page who had depression while she was taking it, so she stopped. I've also had people tell me that it inhibited their supply, and as soon as they stopped taking it, then they had an increase in production. So generally, fenugreek is one of those that it's iffy. A lot of people recommend it. A lot of lactation consultants recommend it. My recommendation is that should be the one that you wait to take until after you have milk, because that way then you know that it's not going to inhibit your production. Domperidone has the strongest evidence for successful lactation promotion, and a lot of people are afraid of Dom, and I really don't understand why, and I'm gonna put this out there again. I know that it's not approved in the United States by the FDA, but if you have a doctor that you're open with, that doctor can write you a prescription for it, and you can get it filled at a compounding pharmacy if you find one that will fill it. If not, you can get it filled at a Canadian pharmacy or any other pharmacy overseas, and you can legally import it back into the United States as long as it's less than 3 months' supply and you can prove that it belongs to you and you're not trying to sell it. So you can legally-ish have domperidone. And if you're concerned about the risk factors and you've heard that it creates or that you could have a heart attack from it, you know, I did a whole episode on this, but let me just go through this really quick again. Back many years ago, and I don't remember exactly how long ago, I don't have those notes in front of me, but we'll say longer than 10 years ago, there was a study being done on a group of elderly people that were going through chemotherapy. And domperidone was used in very large liquid doses to combat the nausea from the chemotherapy. And several men in their 70s had a heart attack. And so the domperidone was blamed for it. Now, was it at fault? I don't know. But if you look at this as a whole, you know, people going through chemotherapy are already having issues. The dosages was so large that, you know, nobody normally takes that amount. And they were all elderly, 70 and older. So, you know, that's just something to think about. In Canada, domperidone is prescribed for small children who have gastrointestinal issues. You know, it's prescribed all over the world, with the exception of the United States, because of those tests where the people had chemotherapy and they had heart attacks, the domperidone was blamed to be the drug at fault. But even if the dom was the drug at fault, it was such large doses and it was given intravenously. Nobody takes that amount. Am I saying it's safe? I'm not, because again, I'm not a doctor. I'm just giving you the information and you decide what you want to do with it. Okay, so moving right along. Where was I? We were talking about dom. There is a published case report of a successful induced lactation in a transgender woman who used dom. And like I said, it's not FDA approved for use in the United States. And herbal galactagogues may also be used, but, you know, there's cost and risk and side effects to any of those. So, you know, that may be a deciding factor in what you decide to use or not use. When I was putting together my notes for this episode, you know, I read quite a few articles. There's one case study, and I guess the rest are anecdotal, but there was a lot of, I read, I think, 6-8 different, you know, very brief articles about transgender women who successfully induced to breastfeed their children. As a matter of fact, I'll talk about it a little later, about a transgender woman who froze sperm, and then her and her partner decided to have children. They used her sperm to impregnate her partner, and then she breastfed that baby. So that's an amazing story. And, you know, you really have to look for these stories, but they're out there. Okay, so after the prolactin, then we move to the expression. An expression in general, you withdraw all from all the high doses of estrogen and progesterone during the expression phase. So now we'll say it's 3 months later. And then you resume your original estrogen and progesterone doses. Alternately, estrogen may be lowered even further. It can be dropped all the way down to 0.025 milligrams of an estradiol patch. Side effects of lowering estrogen to this level must be considered, though, if you've been well maintained at a higher level previously. Okay, so during this phase, this is when you want to start consistent hand expression and or pumping. You can also use the TENS unit, which I've talked about before, and you want to gradually increase up to 5 to 10 minutes, 6 to 8 times a day. You need to talk to a lactation consultant at this point. Well, I mean, you don't need to, but they can help you with, excuse me, they can help you with flange fitting, teaching you about pumps if you don't know, you know, and all that stuff. So a lactation consultant can be a really helpful tool in your journey. Pumping without expressing milk can get a little uncomfortable, you know, dry pumping. There are, even wet pumping can be uncomfortable too. Let's be honest here. It, you know, can be uncomfortable, especially if you're still exploring pumps and flanges and you're not sure. There are some lubricants that you can use inside the flange, like lanolin, coconut oil. There are specific ointments that you can use. I use one by Boob Ease. It's an organic nipple balm, and I rub that on the inside of my flange on my LV just because I want to decrease the friction. I'm going to say that we're going to assume that the hormones are having an effect. And the period of the most visible breast growth is often during the first 8 weeks of treatment. You'll notice an enlargement. The enlargement is potentially just temporary, as it's primarily due to the engorgement of blood vessels and enabling increased circulation to the breast. Estrogen hormones stimulate cell mitosis and growth of ductal systems. The development and differentiation of the glandular tissue, such as the lobules and the alveoli, is dependent on progesterone. And breast fat seems to require both. Now, how do you know when you're in lactogenesis? A genetic woman who's given birth also expels the hormone-producing placenta, and the estrogen and progesterone levels in her body suddenly drop. In a transgender woman, seizing an additional high estrogen and progesterone dosage that's been taken for several months will have the same effect if the hormones have worked. Recognizing that the birth has happened, the pituitary gland now signals the body to make milk. Success is not always guaranteed, but some milk production can be expected in the majority of cases. Milk production typically begins between 1 to 4 weeks after initiating stimulation using prolactin-enhancing drugs, although it can be as little as 2 to 3 days if hormones were taken and were effective, or as long as 4 to 6 weeks if relying purely on mechanical stimulation. If it's not possible to take additional female hormones in order to stimulate the breast to prepare for lactation, or if the hormones have no effect due to hyperplasia breasts, don't give up. This is because prolactin and oxytocin, and I've said this before, the hormones which govern lactation are pituitary and not ovarian. Both prolactin, the milk-making hormone, and oxytocin, the milk-releasing hormone, are produced in response to nipple stimulation. Now, as your body readies itself for lactation, it pumps extra blood into the alveoli, making the breasts firm and full. Swollen blood vessels combined with the abundance of milk may make the breast temporarily painful and engorged, but pumping or expressing frequently in the first few days will help to relieve any of that discomfort. Now, I'm not saying that you're gonna, you know, all of a sudden have copious amounts of milk, because generally that's reserved for breastfeeding mothers who actually go through a pregnancy and deliver a placenta. But can you make milk? Absolutely. Can I tell you how much it's gonna be? No, I'm sorry, I can't. There are days when I produce between 6 and 8 ounces. There are days that I have produced up to 12 ounces. And there's some days that I barely get 4 ounces. So, you know, it all depends on you, your body, your commitment, you know, all the other steps, the pumping and the, you know, what you decide to take or what you decide not to take. All those things are going to make a difference. But the biggest difference is going to be you and how dedicated you are to this process. So the last thing I want to leave you with, a little quote that I found online, and it was about breastfeeding by a trans woman. In 2010, on the Oprah Winfrey Show, she featured a Dr. Christine McGinn. And I don't remember this. I don't know. Maybe somebody out there will go, oh, gosh, I remember when that happened. But she was the mom who fathered her own children. That's what I was talking about earlier. Christine is a lesbian, male-to-female, transgender woman. And she had a sperm sample frozen, and this was used for an IVF procedure, which happily resulted in her female partner giving birth to twins. Christine was able to breastfeed these babies, and she said, a lot of women who adopt go through a regimen of hormones before they have their child, and that enables them to breastfeed by the time they get their child. So I just did the same protocol. It's basically stimulating pregnancy with hormones, and since I transitioned 10 years ago, I had enough breast development where it was basically the identical situation. So there you go. So we know that there's a factual case study of a transgender woman who, through the use of domperidone and following the Newman-Goldfarb protocols, she successfully breastfed her baby. And then here's another doctor that successfully breastfed her baby. So we know that transgender women can do it. All you got to do is, be determined that this is something that you're going to do. Just like me, you can accomplish it. Now, a couple of other things really quick that I just want to touch on. I had somebody ask me about nipple piercings, because my nipples aren't pierced. I have other places pierced. My tongue is pierced. My belly button is pierced. But I was always afraid to get my nipples pierced because I thought it would hurt. Obviously, you're probably thinking, oh, well, dumbass, did your tongue hurt? Anyway, so I asked a couple of people in my lactation group about nipple piercings and breastfeeding. And then I also checked the La Leche website and saw what their opinion is on it. They recommend that you either wait until you're done breastfeeding to get your nipples pierced, or you take the piercings out through the length of time that you're breastfeeding. Now, the ladies in my lactation group said that because I asked, can't you just take them out, feed or suckle your partner, whatever, and then put them back in? I was told that they heal up too quickly and you can't just take them out and put them back in and take them out and put them back in. If you want to get your nipples pierced, but you're thinking about lactating, I don't know. I guess you still could, but it's going to make it a little complicated to pump or suckle a partner because there's also the choking hazard of the jewelry. So I guess that, that decision is up to you. If you want to get it done and you want to lactate, maybe you have to weigh one against the other, or maybe you can figure out how to make it work. That's entirely up to you. Another topic I want to touch on briefly is, whether one side produces more than the other side, and is that normal? That's perfectly normal. I just posted in my Facebook group the other day that the average woman, their left side is bigger and it produces more than the right side. I'm the oddball because it's the right side for me. The right side is bigger and the right side produces more, but it's perfectly normal to have that happen. And I have noticed on occasion that can fluctuate. I mean, my left side never gets bigger than the right side. The right side stays bigger, but sometimes the left side will produce more than the right side. Not very often, but occasionally. So it's perfectly normal to have one side more dominant than the other side. All right, ladies, that's it for this evening. Don't forget, go by the website, lactationstation2020.com, and subscribe for the, to our email. We'll have another giveaway coming up sometime this month. Go to Facebook and join our Facebook group, Lactation Station 2020. It's super easy to find. Let's just work hard to build this community for each other and all those other wonderful ladies out there that need help, that don't know where to go and don't know how to reach out. Let's do what we can to help build this community. That's it for tonight. I'm Michaela. Have a great night.